You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Smart Sex, Smart Love. We're talking about sex goes beyond the taboos, and talking about love goes beyond the honeymoon. I'm Dr. Joe Court. Thanks for tuning in.
Hi, and welcome to Smart Sex, Smart Love. I'm Dr. Joe Court, and today's podcast, we're going to be talking to Richard Spratt. Richard Spratt received his PhD in developmental psychology from UC Berkeley in 1994. He's currently directing research projects focused on identity, development, and health, well-being in people who express alternative sexualities and non-traditional relationships, with a special emphasis on kink and BDSM sexuality, polyamory, or consensual non-monogamy. He's also president-elect of the Society for the Psychology of Sexual Orientation and Gender Diversity. And Richard currently teaches courses in the Department of Human Development and Women's Studies at California State University, East Bay, and graduate level courses at various universities in the Bay Area, including UC Berkeley and Holy Names University. And today we're going to be talking about kinky sex and self-exploration, exploring gender and sexual identities. Welcome, Richard.
Well, it's good to be here.
Really good to be here. I've been following your work for years and always like learning from you. I think you're always, and what I love about your work is you stay on top of it. You're always adding to and learning more and teaching it.
Well, I got to say that job is getting harder and harder. Every year we have more people really looking at kink, BDSM, polyamory. The field has really exploded in the past few years.
That's incredible. And so you got to stay on your toes.
Yes, a lot. It's kind of hard sometimes.
Well, can you, maybe we could start with, because I ask everybody this, and I get asked this all the time, and I never know that I have the right answer or what, but people are going to ask, well, what's kink versus non-kink? How do you know?
Yeah, I've been wrestling with that one for a really long time. You know, on the sort of first go at it is, something's kinky if it's something you don't do, right? So, yes. But if you look at it more closely, I think a lot of it has to do with, to a certain extent, some people find it erotic or very arousing to, in essence, play with power. You know, someone is being more powerful than someone else or being attracted to the exertion of power. So that's the dominance. And that leaks over to some other things. But often we actually consider it all to be like an umbrella that covers a number of things, power, intense sensations or sensation play, doing different things to feel a variety of different sensations. A lot of role play and trying to get into a different headspace. So it's sort of like a little bit of theater. Sometimes it's about trying to reach different states of consciousness. And sometimes it's about just really exploring your own sexuality, your own, what I call sometimes call your erotic landscape. And like, so what is it exactly that you find really arousing or attractive? So if you look at it all, there's generally a huge range of different things that might fall under it. But those I sometimes have called, you know, kink is sort of the extreme sports of sex.
I like that.
It's just, you know, you do something and you just kind of push it a little bit further than you normally would. Although, you know, some people there, again, even within the people who do kink, there's a range. Sometimes it's very simple, you know, blindfold during sex. Sometimes it can get really, really elaborate. So, But for the most part, a lot of people are after this some sort of different kind of intense sensation and or the, you know, eroticizing power.
That's, and I can imagine as I was listening to you, I was thinking, God, they could even sound like vanilla sex, right? Non-kink sex. But in this case with kink and fetishes, and you've written about this and teach it, it's also, it includes atypical things, non-normative things. Now that it's not normal, but it's not the norm of what people do, right? Would you get that?
Yeah, very much. I mean, it's generally not the norm that somebody would, for example, spend a lot of time and a lot of money on getting a particular wardrobe, a leather outfit, a rubber suit, a furry costume. Mm-hmm. So in a certain level, sometimes the difference is just the amount of time and attention that a person puts into it, which is, again, is like similar to any sports fanatic. You know, you can really go all out. And so some people just do it in the realm of sexuality.
Right. Right. And so in the realm of sexuality, you say that kink and personal growth can go together. How does that work?
Well, again, one of the things that's pretty common among people who really identify and sort of get involved in the kink subculture, is that they really are trying to explore themselves. Let's try this new thing. I have always wanted to try that. Or here's something, you know, my partner wants to try something I never thought about. So on a very practical level, we're talking about exploration. And so that can lead to discoveries of yourself. You know, I didn't know that I would really like that. Or I thought I would really like X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. I tried it. And guess what? It actually doesn't do it for me mm-hmm. as much as I thought it might. So on a certain level, just learning about yourself leads to a certain sense of personal growth. But beyond that, the practice of doing this with someone else, of really exploring your own sexuality, means also that you it's a very intimate act mm-hmm. that requires a lot of trust and a lot of communication. Mm-hmm. So as that deepens, you learn more about relationships, you learn more about yourself. And it's not just what I like and what I don't like. It is really about how do I meet a particular challenge, for example. Mm-hmm. How do I find this place where I can really trust and surrender to somebody else?
So, I mean, we would be talking about, just for examples, because again, like the way you're describing it, I can hear somebody going, well, God, I'm vanilla, and that's true for me. But we're talking about things like, do I want to be slapped? Do I want to be spit on? Do I want to be choked? Do I want to have a collar on my body? Like things that you wouldn't normally expect to happen in a sexual act with another person. Is that right?
Yeah, generally. So there's a particular style that often people, you know, get involved in the kink subculture will adopt. And there are some common things. So there's this huge range of sex toys and instruments that you can explore. Some people get so involved in rope, like tying someone up. Well, it's not just tying someone up. There are hundreds of ways to tie someone up with hundreds of different kinds of rope that give you different kinds of sensory experiences or mechanics in terms of, you know, working with that material. So when you dive into it, it becomes easy to really get very elaborate pretty quickly in ways that just, you know, most people would not do.
Right. So like I have people say this all the time in my office, and I'm sure you've heard this too. What do you mean you want to put a collar on somebody? What do you mean you want to slap somebody? You know, what happened in your childhood? What kind of trauma did you experience that you wouldn't want to have the normative, heteronormative, eye-gazing, making love? And I'd love for you to respond to that.
Well, generally, I would say that, well, first off, the research does show that there is no connection between childhood neglect or abuse and interest in this area. So that's a common myth. Mm-hmm. It's not actually supported by any evidence. And a lot of people who have perfectly normal childhoods get into kinky sex, and sometimes very much so. So there's that aspect. I would say that it's sort of like being able to, decide that this is an area you really want to explore and gather some skill and, in fact, build an identity or a community around is not much different than would be for like a vanilla person. I would say in many ways, there's a lot more similarity than difference other than some of the practices, right? And what it looks like. It looks different. Mm-hmm. But the inside, the inside experience and perspective is not that much different. I would say that the person who's asking that question, the first thing I would say is actually there's a lot more similarity than you think.
There is. I did not know that there's no research that is out there. I know there's a lot of anecdotal. I know therapists make up a lot that, well, if you're into this, then you must have been traumatized because they're not sexually trained, right? But I thought that there was some connection, not to all kink, but that sometimes you can eroticize the trauma that happened to you in childhood. But that could be true for anything, right?
Well, yes, it can be. It's amazing what humans can eroticize. Yes, there are certainly cases where people who have experienced abuse can find certain elements of that to be erotic. And to me, this goes back to, so while that happens, that's not, it's not the same thing as somehow in some way the abuse causing the arousal, desire, attraction.
Okay.
And in fact, if you go and you really ask those people, it'll be certain aspects, but do they really want to recreate the original, trauma or the original abuse? No. They don't really want to go back to that space or that place, but certain elements of it might be attractive. And that's because, again, sort of like another metaphor I tend to use is like, there are some people who really love roller coasters and some people who don't, right? And some people who really love horror films and some people who don't. And if you look at those things, the people, watching the scary film, they're not really wanting to be like terrified, mm-hmm. right? They want to experience a thrill. So in a way, finding something about your past, even if it wasn't if it was a traumatic experience, there's still something kind of scary, kind of thrilling about it. And often that's what people are like trying to explore. They're trying to they find it attractive because, as we know, in a lot of dynamics, right, of erotic arousal, is that we often have this push-pull. We have tons of movies, right, about, it's sort of like a basic romantic trope. The woman who is attracted to the man who actually turns her off at first or disgusts her or somehow in some way, she finds really unacceptable. And then over time, there's some sort of arousal that goes with that. Being attracted to things that kind of scare you is pretty fundamental. And because it increases our desire, it increases our experience of pleasure when we overcome it. When we, overcome the hurdle or the stumbling block and finally reach, our goal, our place of happiness. So It's, you know, I tend to look at it as it increases the erotic desire, which increases the pleasure once you actually get there.
Okay. And so then how would you have talked also about how kink and fetish can be a way to explore gender expression or gender identity? How so?
Well, you're already doing things that are like non-normative, right? Non-traditional. You're already kind of going off into different weird kinds of landscapes and territory. So having that extend to things like gender expression or even gender identity is not really much further to go. When you're already like playing with power, for example, a dominant, submissive sorts of interactions, someone's in charge, someone's letting them, right? Take charge. Generally, that tends to be coded as, you know, men are dominant, women are submissive. And as you start exploring different aspects of, well, maybe I do have a submissive side already, then if I'm a man, then I'm already exploring something which doesn't fit the traditional male role. Mm-hmm. And then how much, you know, intensity around that do you go for? So the same thing, right, for like dominant women. So often the exploration of power can get us focused on things which run against the traditional gender ideology, mm-hmm. Gender roles. Sometimes the power becomes, you know, is really important for me to get aroused. It almost doesn't matter what the gender is, right? So gender becomes less and less important in mm-hmm. some of these activities or some of these types of play. So gender becomes less important. Gender becomes, it's something to, in essence, play with, just like we play with anything else when it comes to trying to figure out what turns us on and what really fits us. So that's sort of like the first part, but there's plenty of then different ways in which that gets expressed. So cuckolding is a very much against the, you know, a kind of traditional sexual and gender roles.
Cuckolding, just so listeners may not know what you're talking about.
So that's when there's a scene where a couple, one of them, in essence, has sex with a third person while someone is either watching or like knowing about it. And it's a kind, sometimes for some people, it's a kind of humiliation play, right? Sometimes it's definitely about, it can be about power. Sometimes it's about really exploring that, you know, my partner's sexuality, you know, their attractiveness, their desire is so much that other people want them. And sometimes it's about, so often it is a case of, you know, you simply watching your partner have sex with someone else. Often though, in a way that kind of puts you in a more submissive position. Mm-hmm. You're only allowed to watch, or you're only allowed to perhaps help a little bit. But otherwise, you know, you're really much, it's kind of voyeuristic. You're really much more of a watcher.
And then you say, oh, go ahead. Were you going to say more?
I'm not doing exactly the whole dynamic justice.
Right. That's good. No, but it's good.
But yeah, that gives you an idea.
Well, I think what might surprise people is when you say that you can be asexual and kinky. Is that really a thing?
Yes. And that's because a lot of kink is not necessarily about sex. So you can, you know, for example, tie someone up and have a whole scene that doesn't involve contacting their genitalia, right? Of having any kind of sexual intercourse. So you can do a whole bunch of things, as spanking, hitting someone with a flogger, you know, going very light and then getting heavier and then going light again. And it's kind of like a massage, but it gets really more intense. All of that can happen without any kind of sexual intercourse.
And you know, that boggles the minds of a lot of people. Then they're not having sex. You know, are you expanding the term sexual? I don't like this. Have you ever heard that?
That last one I have not really heard.
Oh, I hear it. Yeah, because I'm on TikTok now. Right. I do it all the time.
Well, I mean, and that's why I think, you know, you talk to some people and, you know, in fact, I've got a number of research projects really just trying to get a handle on this line between kink and sex. Because a lot of people will say there's a lot of things about kink that's erotic, not necessarily sexual. And then I go, well, okay, so what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
How can something be erotic but not sexual? And you know, I would say a lot of it really depends upon the person and how they make sense of their own sexuality. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, you know, if you ask people, what is sex, you're going to get different answers.
That's right.
To whether or not a particular act is sex or not. So you get the same sort of thing with kink. Is a particular thing kinky or not? Well, kind of depends.
Now, some people wouldn't probably get confused if you were talking about extreme kinks. Like, what would be inclusive of an extreme kink or even a newer kink that you've learned about?
A newer kink or a more extreme?
Yeah, something that people would go, oh, yeah, that's kinky. Yeah, no.
Well, I would say, let's see. On a certain level, probably one of the more common ones is the whole thing about what we call impact play, right? Different kinds of paddling, spanking, flogging, whipping. Those things, you look at them and you're kind of like, I don't know how that's sex.
Well, and you know what people think, like you're just hitting. And what they don't know at kink parties or at kink seminars, you learn where to hit, how to hit. Don't hurt a kidney. Don't cause high blood pressure. You know, I went to a dungeon once for sex therapy research purposes, of course. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered what fire play was like. And I was like, how do you fucking put somebody on fire and then they live through it, right? Well, I watched somebody do it. There's like a whole thing. They shave the hair. They put some solvent on it and the fire's only on the solvent. And then, right? And then I forget how it went, but we blew it out or something. I don't remember. But, right?
Generally, yes. That's certainly a more dramatic and very showy, right?
Very
dramatic. When in fact, you know, it's while it definitely is riskier than spanking someone,
right?
It also looks more dangerous than it actually is if you do it right.
And it's the vulnerability of letting somebody play with fire on you like that. Or I saw one guy, and I've seen this in a lot of pictures throughout my years in porn, but some guy had his penis and testicles through a board. It was a cutout board, and then it was pinned down or nailed down. The scrotum was nailed down, and his penis was fully erect and wrapped up real tight, and he was in in the highest pleasure zone. You could just see he was moaning in delight. And I know most people would look at that as like, how could that be sexy? But it was for him.
Right. And again, there's so much about the whole way in which the body reacts to pain, to intense sensation.
Yes.
To things like that. Because it's very complex, it often can result in feelings that are kind of unexpected, right? You wouldn't think that actually would result in somehow in some way pleasure, but it sets this, much of it is in your head. It's the movie. It's the play going on in your head that often is all part of the package, right? Mm-hmm. And often driving the pleasure. So yeah, you can get fairly extreme things like that. I've seen, you know, these days, in terms of trends, these days, there's a lot now in the past few years about chastity.
Hearing that more, yeah.
Right, yes. So there are special devices that one can put on you know, put on the penis and lock it down. And so that a person is, you know, in essence, under control. And that's become really kind of popular. And it can get combined with cuckolding. It can get combined with a whole set of things. But often it is this kind of like an expression, right, of surrendering yourself to somebody else's control.
Yeah.
And people find that incredibly erotic, even though you're not allowed to get hard.
Right, so. Right. It's because it prevents you because blood flow making it stiff and then it can't get any larger than the cage.
Right. So, and then eventually you stop getting an erection, but the erotic feelings don't go away.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, we don't have much time left. I want to just say thank you for this because, you know, there's a lot of discussion about kink. There's lots of stuff on the internet, lots of stuff on TikTok, whatever, some social media apps, but the academic stuff. So people understand that there's research, that people are really thoughtful about this. And this is not just some gimmicky, I don't know, haphazard thing that you bring to the table. You say, look, we have research. We've been studying this. I think it's invaluable.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think it really, allows us to ask a lot of deep questions about people's sexuality.
It does. So, and it's good to hear. So how can people learn more about you? Where can they find you?
Good. Let's see. I'm a part of two organizations, and the one I think that's probably easiest to reach me at is the Alternative Sexualities Health Research Alliance. And so Richard at TASHRA, TASHRA.org is probably the easiest way. That's the research organization. It's really looking at health and the healthcare experiences of people who are kinky. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the easiest way to reach me. But if you Google me, I'm sure you'll find other ways.
Yes. And let's make sure that they know about your book, Sexual Outsiders, Understanding BDSM Sexualities and Communities. And they can get that on Amazon.com, right?
Absolutely. Yes. It's a book I wrote with a sex therapist.
Yes.
So it was a nice combination of therapy and research.
It really was. I enjoyed the book myself and recommend it to clients. So thank you so much, Richard, for being on the show. And I want to thank all you listeners who've been listening in. If it's your first time, I hope you stay. If you've been listening to me for a while, I hope it's been another good episode for you. And if you want to see more about me and the other stuff I do, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can use the @ Dr. Joe Kort, DrJoeKort. I will see you all next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Smart Sex, Smart Love. I'm Dr. Joe Kort, and you can find me on joekort.com. That's JoeKort.com. See you next time.